I think that might be an option. I don't think what we do next week if you still haven't done your homework. So here's a blank piece of paper. We're going to use it for two purposes today. Airplanes? No, you can make airplanes out of it. Yeah, that's a good reason for me, right? The other thing you're going to do is take notes. It's a horrible school thing that we do. So there's two pieces of, or two purposes for the paper. Purpose number one is for you to take notes, and then purpose two is to do your assignment. Yeah, if you weren't here last week, so you're fine. Here's the new food. You get away with anything.
I get away with everything.
Okay, so who did their assignment? I saw a couple of hands earlier. Do we have a book? Are you going to share it with
me? Or an email?
Do you have
a book? Your printers get like every third line.
No, I mean, you're typically running out of
it. I need to replace one of the cartridges that was on.
All right, let me email it to you. That's good. All right. For those of you who did not do your homework, we'll give you a week of grace. And just so you know what the intent and the reason for the homework assignment is, I believe that if you write out what you did, you think, that you will be able to quantify in your own mind why you think what you think. There is no right or wrong answer.
No wrong answer.
So, please do the homework assignment. The homework assignment was, still is, for those of you who have not done it, do the festivals apply to us today? Why or why not? Why is what we care about? The festivals we've been talking about are Passover, unleavened bread, versions of fruits, trumpets, exactly. So the question is, do they apply to us, and do they not? Why? Okay. The intent is to take all the answers we get, I'll just put them in a document, I'll strip off your name, and then we'll share it with everybody so that everybody can take a look at it. And the purpose is to articulate why you think what you think. The same, the right answer or wrong answer. And then we'll share them with each other. You can see the logic behind each other's person's thinking, etc. Okay, so
we're going to turn the homework in.
At the moment we're kind of working. We're going to light microphone or my laptop. Oh yeah, here's what we'll say. Extract one or two from the other, so do the rest of you, yes, but don't do your homework next week. There'll probably be some kind of test. I don't know what it'll be. So, if you're going to log into that, and when you do that, it's good to find what's in the disconnect point so we don't have that. Jennifer, how well can you hear us?
I can hear you fairly well, other people, not so much.
Okay. So, is there anybody who has not seen this graphic or some variation of this graphic at some point in time? This is the traditional interpretation of Daniel 9:24 that is ubiquitous across the world. Again, is there anybody who has not seen some variation of this?
One.
Okay. Everybody else has at least seen some variation of it. So what you're taking a look at real quick is Daniel 9:24-27 has a prophecy that was given by Gabriel to Daniel. And in that prophecy, he says, from the time that you see a decree to rebuild and restore Jerusalem, there will be a period of 70 sevens. There will be a period of 7 sevens, 62 sevens, another seven that's split in half. And so what most people do, as you'll notice that on the screen, it says there's a very start, the year 457. That is the year 457 BC.
Yeah.
And that date is essential to Christianity. And the reason for that is, if you take the prophecy of Daniel 9, and you say it one day or one year, then we can go from 457, and we arrive at the cross, which is there in the middle. That's what Christianity teaches. But with advocacy, it's all up in the end of the Jesus.
How do we know that one day is here?
So the idea comes from Ezekiel chapter 4, verse 6. One day is as a year is for the Lord. That's the concept. Okay? So that is what Christianity teaches. Alright, so there's two things that are essential about that graph. Number one is the year 457, and number two is the cross. There are several variations to this particular graphic, but that is the basic. So what we're going to do is we want to go and take a look at the year 457. So let's go ahead and go to the next screen, gentlemen. Okay, so this is a little graphic that goes back to the year 400 BC. So 500 years before the time of Christ, 586 years before the time of Christ, is when this graphic takes us. So, Robert, there is a couple of sheets of paper that are probably in that case. Grayson and Kristen need one, you need one, because we're going to have you take a couple of minutes. Oh, wrong one, you know, that's about one. He's good. Okay. So, there are several things that are very important for us to note. Number one is the year 586. Write the number 586 down. It's going to be a very important number that we care about. So, what happened in the year 586 BC? What happens in the year 586 BC is Babylon arrives at the doorsteps of Jerusalem and says, "You guys haven't been paying your taxes. You're in trouble. We're going to bust down your walls. We're going to destroy your houses. We're going to take all the stuff out of the temple. We're going to haul it back to Babylon. And by the way, we're going to take you along with us." All of those people there in Jerusalem, which had not been paying their taxes to the Babylonian Empire, were hauled away. That's what happened in the year 586 BC. It was done by Nebuchadnezzar in the 19th year of his reign. If we take a look at Ezra, is mentioned. Let's go ahead and go to before we leave this screen, let's take a look at a couple of things that are important. So 586 is very important. The other thing is, when they were in captivity, Jeremiah writes a letter to all the exiles saying, "You are going to be in Babylon for 70 years. That's in Jeremiah 29, verse 10. So in Jeremiah 29, verse 10, Jeremiah says, because you guys have not done what God wants you to, you're going to be in Babylon for 70 years. Okay. So if we go from Babylon to 586, and remember these are BC, and we go 70 years, what year should we arrive at? When should the Jews be released from Babylon? That's what that big red line there in the middle of the screen is. 516. So 586 minus 70 takes you to the year 516. Okay? That's another number that's maybe worth noting on your piece of paper. 586 to 516. So those numbers across the top are the years in before Christ or before the Christian era, before the common era, is the way it's often referred to. Another thing that we'll note on this graphic is that we have the decree issued by Cyrus in the year 539. We talked about Cyrus last week. Cyrus is mentioned in the Bible. He's an important figure. He issued that decree in the first year of his reign. The first year of his reign over Babylon. He'd already been king for 40 years. He'd already been emperor of the Medo-Persian Empire for 40 years when he conquered Babylon. But we start counting his first year of his reign in the year in which he took over Babylon. Why? Because Babylon had been a big royal block. And Babylon was a very impressive city. He managed to conquer Babylon. The story about how he did that is interesting. So, those are the things that are important on this. And then we come all the way over to the far right and we have the year 457. In 457, We have Artaxerxes Longimanus. Artaxerxes Longimanus was another Persian emperor. He goes by several names, Artaxerxes Longimanus, or just Longimanus, or just Artaxerxes. Artaxerxes is a title. Like calling a person president or calling somebody Caesar. So, Cyrus, who's there in the blue, right after 539, Cyrus is, has a son, his name is Cambyses, and then there's another one named Bardas, which you can't see on there because he's a little tiny, he only lived for half a year. I shouldn't say that, but he reigned for a half a year. And then he was murdered by Darius, who took over. So, those are the important things from this. So let's go ahead and go to our next screen. Now we're going to do some chronology. Everybody loves looking at chronology in the Bible, right? It's the most exciting part of the Bible. Our eyes glaze over when we get the chronology. Guess what? The chronology matters. Kind of like looking at your DNA. One of those long strings. And people start saying there's a bunch of junk DNA in your body. Guess what? That junk DNA has a purpose. So let's take a look at the chronology. In the chronology, we happen to have Ezra. So there in the writing, Ezra 7, Ezra, the guy who wrote the book of Ezra, gives his lineage. This is who my father was, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, great-great-great. And he traces his ancestry all the way back to Aaron and all the way back to Levi. So Ezra was the son of Seraiah. That's how you pronounce it. Seraiah. Seraiah was the last high priest in Jerusalem when Babylon conquered the first temple. When Babylon destroyed the first temple, Seraiah was the high priest. Ezra is the son of the high priest. And his grandfather was the high priest. And his great-grandfather was the high priest. So Ezra comes from a lineage with an impressive pedigree. Ezra is not the first son. He was never in line to be high priest. Ezra was at least son number two. We don't know how many sons there were, but Ezra gives his lineage in Ezra 7. And that lineage is also found in 1 Chronicles, also found in Jeremiah. So take a look at what it says in 2 Kings 25. Then the commander, and this is Nebuchadnezzar, which happens to be Nebuchadnezzar's general, which comes and destroys Jerusalem. And so he says, then the commander of the imperial guard to Seraiah, chief priest, the second priest, and a whole bunch of other guys, and we continue down to the bottom of that passage, we find that the high priest was taken and killed by Nebuchadnezzar. So why do we care? The reason we care is because what Ezra is telling us is that he was alive when Babylon was destroyed. So in Ezra chapter 7, Ezra says, my dad was Seraiah. Seraiah was killed by Nebuchadnezzar in 586. It's important. So what we care about is that Ezra was alive in 586. Okay. Any questions, any comments? We all buy the idea that Ezra was alive.
He's not just writing this saying, this is what I know about my dad.
He is in Ezra 7 and says, I am the son of Seraiah, and my father, and my grandfather, my great grandfather, and this is who I am. He's a listing his pedigree.
Well, I understand that, but he could have written it after the fact. And told the story about his dad.
So let's say that he told the story about his dad. So what is the youngest possible age that Ezra could have been in 586? If his father is Seraiah. He's a baby. Let's say that he wasn't even born. If he was a fetus in his mouth. So look, youngest possible age that Ezra could have been would have been zero. In 586.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't know what age he was when he was taken to Babylon, but he was at least a zero. Okay. Now, the Babylonians, when they're taking people to Babylon, they probably aren't going to bother taking pregnant women because they're just not going to pass it. And they're probably not going to take infants. Who's going to walk infants for thousands of miles? Ain't going to happen. So, wherever age he would be, pick an age. He's young. We know he's young. We can tell you later why we know he's young. All right, let's make a good argument screen. Anyway, the important thing is Ezra, the writer of the book of Ezra, is alive in 586. He's alive at least in the womb. Okay, so what we're doing now is we're taking a look at the decrees. Remember, the decree we care about is the decree from Daniel chapter 9, verse 24 through 27. And one of these decrees needs to be in the year 457. We know what we want the answer to be. Now we got to figure out how to get to the answer. Okay? So, there are four decrees listed in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. One of those decrees is issued by Cyrus, and it's found in Ezra chapter 1. It's one that we talked about last week, and that decree was issued in the year 539. What had happened was Cyrus enters the city. The Jews who happened to be in Babylon, as captives, rush over and say, "Hey, you're a great new king. We're so glad that you're here." You never really did like our Babylonian captives too well. And by the way, did you know your name is in our scrolls? And those was listed long before you were alive. Isn't that impressive? Oh, really? Show me. So they pull out the scroll, and there, lo and behold, there is Cyrus's name. Cyrus says, "Well, that's impressive. Guess what? I'm going to let you all go back to Jerusalem. In fact, I want you to build your temple, your God's temple, in my name. Go back to Jerusalem and build my temple." He issues that decree in the year 539 BC. And with him, what happens is about 50,000 people go back to Jerusalem in the year 539. So, there are some people who go back, and we kind of care about their names. So number one, we have five gatekeepers who are listed by name. So if you take a look at Nehemiah chapter 7, verse 45, we have a list of the names of five guys who returned to Jerusalem in the year 539, along with 50,000. We're going to list three of those. Three of them is Shalom, Akub, and Talmah. Just remember their names. If you want to put their name on your piece of paper, that's fine. The only thing we care about is those three individuals were alive in the year 539. And they were old enough to go back to Jerusalem. They were listed as, and they were made gatekeepers when they get to Jerusalem. So what does a gatekeeper mean? It's kind of interesting, actually. They're called porters in some of your versions of the Bible. They're called gatekeepers. A gatekeeper is responsible for basically the running of the palace, the temple. They are the guards. They are the person who is in charge of making sure all the gold and silver that's in the temple stays in the temple. It doesn't get hauled off by somebody. They are the people who are responsible for making sure that all of the plates and dinnerware, etc., get set out properly. The king and all of these guests. They're the people who are responsible for making sure only the proper people get in and out of the temple and are out of the palace. There are 212 of them that were set up by David and Solomon for their operation in the first temple. The gatekeepers are taking a prominent role. If you go back and you take a look at the story there in 2 Kings, which we just kind of skimmed over earlier, when Ezra's father, Seariah, was taken out and killed, also a group of gatekeepers were. They were primarily the bodyguards, sergeant of arms, the treasury official, the guard on the vault. That was a job. Anyway, that's who those individuals are. They're listed by name. Dan, David, and Solomon call up, there are four mighty gatekeepers. They're the most important people after the king in operation of the facilities. Anyway, what we care about is decree number one, position in 539. Decree number two was issued in the year 520. We'll talk about that in quite a bit more. It's highlighted in yellow for a reason. The one in 520 is listed in Ezra chapter 6. The one in 520 is a reaffirmation of the Cyrus decree. So what happens in 539 is Cyrus gives the decree. The Jews go back to Jerusalem. They get to Jerusalem and they're harassed, bothered. They got priorities of getting houses built, etc. In fact, when they get to Jerusalem, there's 50,000 of them who arrive, and there's not enough housing for all 50,000 of them. There's not enough houses that are in decent condition that somebody can live in them. And so what they do is they say, okay, we got a lot of you who are here who want to live in Jerusalem. Sorry, but there's only room for 5,000 of the 50,000. 45,000 of you are going to have to live in the other towns. There's not room. So how are we going to decide who gets to live here? We're going to draw lots. So one person out of 10 is allowed to stay in Jerusalem. The other 9 have to leave. Now, the Levites were all allowed to stay in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is where everybody wanted to be. And so a bunch of people said, oh, well, I am of the Levite tribe. I'm a Levite. So they pull up the scroll and find your name. But I am a Levite. You guys just happen to keep good records. Well, until we can prove that you're a Levite, you can't stay in Jerusalem. And how did they go about proving it? They waited for the priests to show up to hold the throne of the throne. The white stone is black stone. You're a priest. You're not a priest. That's what all happened. That's recorded in the book of Ezra and Nehemiah. All right. What happened in 520 is that the temple still had not been built. So it has been 19 years since Cyrus issued a decree, and the temple is still in ruins. So Darius issues the decree a second time and reissues that decree and says, what Cyrus said, do it. We'll look at that in more detail because it's kind of important. The third decree that we're going to look at is in 501. In 501, the city walls are still in disrepair. They haven't been built. There's gaps in the walls. So Darius, Artaxerxes Darius, issues a decree to rebuild the walls. We'll look at that in more detail. And then 457. Now, down in the bottom left-hand corner, you'll notice that we have four references, A, C, D, and E. So most everybody takes the Ezra 7. So there's a decree in Ezra chapter 7. It is by far and away the number one reference to 457. So all of Christendom takes Ezra 7 and says that is the decree we should use and it should be in 457. Okay. We're going to discuss that in a lot more detail. So those are the things to keep in mind. Number one, it's 586 is the year in which the temple was destroyed. The Jews should be released from captivity in 516. There was a decree in 539, there's another decree in 520, there's another decree in 501, and there might have been a decree in 457. Okay. Those are the things we want to look at. The other thing we care about are who the gatekeepers were that were released with Cyrus. And there are three of them listed, or five of them listed by name. We care actually about two of them. Okay. Next screen. Oh, one other thing we need to think about here is Ezra. Remember, Ezra is alive in 586. If Ezra wrote chapter 7 in the year 457, how old would Ezra have to be? He did the math for you on the screen. Okay. At the absolute minimum, and that's assuming that Ezra was 0 years of age in 586, he would have had to have been 129 years of age in the year 457. Okay? Very simple.
We know that's the right value.
How do we know it's the right value?
In 586.
Okay, so before we got here, we have the chronologies of 1 Chronicles in Ezra chapter 7. And so in chapter 7, Ezra says, my father was the high priest. So in fact, if you go to chapter 7 and you look at the first several verses, Ezra says, my father was high priest Sirianah, and his father was Jehovah. His father, et cetera, et cetera. He goes through and gives the genealogy of his name of all people. If you then take a look at second, actually it's up on the screen, and it was kind enough to put it there on the screen for us. So Ezra says, my name is Ezra, my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, all of these people, and it matches the chronology we find in 1 Chronicles 6, 1 through 5, or 1 through 15. By the way, I've chosen to take this entire thing and work it out. I put it up on the site so you guys can all go home and look at it and read it in true leisure. So everything I'm saying today is in written form, you can read it and go back and verify everything I say. Okay? So we'll give you that link a little bit later. So anyway, that is his lineage. He says, my father is the high priest. He says that in 2 Kings. So in order for him to have gotten to the age or to the 457, he would have at the minimum had to have been 129 years of age. If he was 10 years old when his father was killed in 586, how old would he have been in 457? 7 years, yeah. So just if they add 10 to 129, he would have been 29. And if he was 20 years old when his father was killed, he would have been
141.
Where are go back to our reference in 2 Kings. That was 2 Kings 25 verses 18 through 21. So write that down on your piece of paper there, and that way you can take a look at it at your leisure. But practically what happens is Sariah is the name of the chief priest who was taken by Nebuchadnezzar and killed. He was actually taken by Nebuchadnezzar's general, Nebuchadnezzar, and I recognize his name. He was taken to Nebuchadnezzar and he was killed. Then you use Zara. There we go. Zara. So 2 Kings 25, 18, 21, and then we find the chronology and the genealogy of Ezra in listed both in 1 Chronicles and Ezra chapter 7. Now, Ezra's name is not mentioned in 1 Chronicles. Instead, he gives Sariah his oldest son's name, which is Jehoshaphat. Okay. The point we're making with this is that Ezra would have been an exceptionally old man. By the way, how old did humans live this time? This era, according to my little chart here. So if you go back to that Noah, which is about 2200, 950 years. You go down to Levi, and it was 137 years. So take a look at Genesis chapter 6, verse 3. Genesis chapter 6, verse 3 tells us what the age of, what the lifespan of man is after the flood.
8 years.
And that's kind of what we're about now here. So in Genesis chapter 6, verse 3, it'll tell you that the limit on human mankind's existence is 120 years. Okay? All right, Jennifer, let's go ahead and skip ahead of new screens. We're not going to base our theology on this one concept, though. Okay. So instead of what we're going to do, is we're going to take a look at the reign of Darius. Darius was the Mede Persian who kicked out Cyrus's project. So, Darius, Darius, Darush, king of kings, king of Syria, king of Babylon, king of Media Persia, king of 32 different places. He reigned for 36 years. How he became king is a little bit of interest. So you'll see a little bunch of white little squares down at the bottom of the green bar. Each one of those dots represents 1 year of his reign. Bigger dots with 5 years, just so we can do it. We care about Darius' reign a lot. A lot of things happen in his reign. Things that are of interest. By the way, Darius was. So number one, Cambyses, who's there in the orange, was the son of Cyrus. When Cyrus died, Cambyses was made emperor king, and he was off in Egypt fighting the Egyptians because they weren't paying taxes. Well, people didn't want to pay taxes. And so one of the primary things that kings like to do is go around and collect taxes. So Cambyses was off in Egypt collecting these taxes. And keep in mind, the temple of Cyrus has already issued a decree, and the temple is theoretically being built. The governor of the province and all of the opponents of Israel says, you know, we really don't think that temple should be built, and we don't think the city walls should be repaired, because, you know, those Jews are just a bunch of rebellious people. And as soon as they let them rebuild their city walls, they're going to just rebel again. Yeah. And it'll be a whole lot more difficult to swat them back down once the wall built, so why don't you just stop it right now? And so they sent a letter to Cambyses, and his successor, which is their left line, his name is Vargas the imposter. And they sent a letter to him and said, do you really want them to do it? And either Cambyses or Vargas issued a stop work order. Said your building permit has been revoked. You can no longer build. That was issued either by Cambyses or Vargas. Anyway, Cambyses is in Egypt, and he is got the Egyptians to pay the tax. And he's headed back towards Babylon, which there's again another wall going on. And on his way back, he has a little accident. And the accident is curious in the sense that he has his sword on his hip and he's hopping on his horse. The sheath that holds the sword apparently breaks, stabs him in the eye. He dies of gangrene 2 weeks later. Now, his lance bearer, the person who carries his lance for him, anybody want to guess what his name was? This might happen to be their heads, yeah. So whether or not the history books write that under mysterious circumstances Cambyses died. And it just so happens he died of a lance wound, and it just so happens to be the guy who carried his lance for him happened to be the guy who became a king. Just a curiosity. Now, Vargas happened to become emperor while they were in transit from Egypt to Babylon. When Darius gets to Babylon, he said, Vargas, I'm sorry, but this is my seat. Get out of my way. All right, that's just a little interesting history. It doesn't really matter. So, in year one of Darius' rule, Daniel has a dream. He has the vision of Daniel chapter 9. So if we go back and look at Daniel chapter 9, we discover in year one of Darius is when the vision happens that we're talking about. The Daniel 9, 27, 26, 24 through 27 is, and when you see the decree go forth, there'll be 70 sevens. That dream, that vision by Gabriel, happens in year one of Darius, which is how many years after Cyrus issued his decree? So Cyrus issued his decree on your notes in the year 539. How many years later, 539 minus 521, Remember, we don't do captives, we're only doing simple addition and subtraction. So 539 minus 521 equals what?
18.
So 18 years after Cyrus issues his decree, Daniel has his dream, the Rock of God. Yes, about the 77th, the 77th, 62, 77th, etc. That dream, that interpretation by Gabriel occurs 18 years after Cyrus' decree.
Okay, so I'm a little confused because you mentioned Daniel and Gabriel.
Yes, so here's what happened. Daniel has a vision. That vision is given in Daniel chapter 8. It's the vision of a ram and a goat fighting each other. The horns break off. Daniel says, I don't understand. Gabriel, the angel Gabriel, is sent to Daniel to interpret and explain the vision. Daniel says, I still don't get it. He then issues a prayer and asks for understanding. Gabriel is sent to him and says, the explanation to your vision is what we find in Daniel chapter 9. So it's Gabriel who gives the interpretation to Daniel's dream. It happens in 18 years after Cyrus. Okay. So Daniel chapter 9, vision, dream, is given in year 1 of Darius. It happens in year 521. Okay. In Ezra chapter 6, we are told that in the second year of Darius, by the way, the name Darius is rarely used in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. Usually they use the term Artaxerxes. Keep that in mind. Artaxerxes is a title. Artaxerxes applies to multiple Persian emperors. And Artaxerxes was even referred to Cambyses and to Artax as well. So, in year 2 of Darius' reign, according to Ezra, Ezra chapter 6, all of chapter 6 happens in year 2 of Darius, the year 520. Now, what happened in this version, this second decree? What had happened was the province of beyond the river. So the name of the province is beyond the river. Beyond the river includes Jerusalem, it includes Damascus, it includes all of the cities there along the coastline of the Mediterranean. That is the province of beyond the river. Now, the governor writes a letter and says, oh, we have a new king, King Darius. We have had this stop work order on Jerusalem. What do you want us to do? Do you want us to let them build, or do you want us to stop what we're building? What would be your pleasure? The letter arrives in Darius. He takes a look at it and says, oh, pull out that scroll from Cyrus. Pull out the scroll from Cyrus. Cyrus says, build the temple. Darius says, good idea. Build the temple. In fact, I'm going to not only instruct you to build the temple as instructed by Cyrus, but I am going to, this is all written in Ezra 6, so read it to me, it's actually worth the read. Effectively, it says, look, anybody who interferes with the rebuilding of the temple, you're supposed to pull down one of the beams out of their house, sharpen it on one end, and impale it on one, and then reduce the house to rubble all around them. Anybody who interferes with the rebuilding of the temple is in trouble. Not only that, but all the taxes that you guys collect on my behalf from the builder and enormous in the battle, I want you to take all of the gifts that you say and use it to build the temple. So you're using the empire's money to build the temple. The governor of the province of Yom River decides, you know, people want me.
Were there two or three cats that were like ringleaders or trying to send a chair? Was he one of the guys that tried to prevent or stop or?
Seneca was not, but yes, there were, and they were listed by name, but as to the ones which were.
And where are they in all of this? Like, what country were they from? Was there?
So, what we have is, I'm not sure if that's his name, but the governor at the time when the sovereign order was given was Hakanadi, something like that. And they were basically from what we call Syria today. So they would have been the tribes around that area. So keep in mind, what happens is when Babylon or Persia or any of the other places, what they do is they would go in and conquer people. And then they would do several things. They would take all the able-bodied people, and they would transport them to another province. And they would then import people from another province and bring them into this province. So basically, the best way to stop a rebellion is to just disperse everybody and repopulate with new people. So what happened is around Jerusalem, you had a motley group of people from all over the empire. And all of them were opposed to Jerusalem being rebuilt. Why? Because we just simply don't want Jews. They're a bunch of monks. Okay? So that story is told throughout the book of Ezra and Nehemiah, and they're talking about all the difficulties they had, etc. So that's the era in which this will happen. So what happens then is in the year 520, Darius reissues the decree, reaffirms that decree, and says, use my empire's money to make sure that temple gets rebuilt. Okay? That happens in 520. Let's go to the next screen here. So these are the things that happen in Ezra chapter 6. In verse 24, all the work that's taught were ordered under Cambyses and Barnabas had been stopped until the second year of Darius. In verse 7, Darius says, stop interfering. In verse 8, he says, pay for it with my money. Verse 11, he says, anybody who's interfered is going to be killed and the house pulled down. Now, I'm going to give you a little, what's in bold there, so it's going to be on the next screen. There's also a message in the prophecy from Haggai and from Zechariah on this year as well. We'll read those in just a second. In verse 15 of Ezra 6, we discover that in year 6, the temple is completely built. Go back to the screen if you would, for example. So in year 6, according to Ezra 6, verse 15, the temple is built, it's completed, it's done. So Ezra chapter 6, verse 15 says the temple is completed. Okay? Notice and remember what year 516 is as compared to 586. What happened in 586? Babylon destroyed the temple. The Jews were taken captive. They were going to be happy for 70 years. 586 minus 516 equals what? 70 years. The temple was rebuilt in the 70th year after it was destroyed. That is what Ezra 6 tells us. All right, let's go ahead and move forward a couple screens. All right, in Ezra 6, we also find reference, let's go to the next screen. So in Ezra 6, we find reference to two prophets. And the two prophets are what inspired them to go ahead and get the temple finished. It comes from the book of Haggai. I know it's tiny, it's hard to read, so open your Bibles if you have it. So Haggai, chapter 1 and chapter 2, there are only two chapters in Haggai, and they're both worth reading. Go ahead.
So it's not the decree to rebuild Jerusalem, it's actually the starting of the building.
We haven't got that far yet. It's a good question, though, but you're right. It's a question. So, the book of Haggai is one of those little books in the Old Testament that we basically tend to ignore. We're going to look at it because it happens to be interesting. So, Haggai, chapter 1, verse 1, tells us, hey, you know, that makes sure that's how cool. Then you just go up so we can see the top.
It won't let me scroll.
All right, make it smaller again so I can see the top.
Yeah, well, we'll get there.
Okay, so in chapter 1, verse 1, it tells us a month and a year in which the message is given. That happens to be in 1:6 of year 2 of Darius. That happens to be the same year in which Darius issues his decree, saying, we're reaffirming what Cyrus had to say. So the year is 520. 520 BC. And Haggai says, I got a message from God. And the message from God basically says this. Actually, I think Tom's version, do you have the Haggai open on your version? I like the way your version reads.
Your version is very correct.
What do you like? You like the message?
I do, but right now I'm looking at the New Living.
The New Living, right? So I haven't read the New Living. I mean, we can read it out, but I personally like the LEV, which is the Lexham English, but any of the Bible verses say the same thing. I just like the way the contemporary language records it. It seems to be made easier to understand. Let me kind of read for you. This is coming out of the contemporary English version. You say the time isn't right to build the temple for me, but is it right for you to build expensive homes instead, while my temple lies in ruins? So effectively, what God himself is saying to the prophet Haggai is, look, you guys returned with Cyrus, and for 19 years, you guys have been building yourself your houses, and you haven't touched my temple. I am not happy. That's what it says in Haggai. Not only that, but he says, look, you have been planting your crops, and you harvest less than you plant. You put all your coins and all your money in your bags. Your bags have holes in them. You have less money than what you put it in. Everything you do is failing, and I'm the one who's making it fail. And I'm making it fail because I'm trying to get your attention. I want my house built. Build it. So if you read all of Haggai, both chapter 1 and chapter 2, by the way, if you make it all the way down to chapter 2, verse 1, somebody read chapter 2, verse 1 for me.
The seventh month, on the 21st day of the month, the word of the Lord came by Haggai the prophet.
Just as a little interruption here, does anybody happen to know what's significant about month 7, day 21? I mean, we all know the answer. It's a festival day. Do you know which festival? We do. Month 7, remember, month 7's got several festivals in it. Day 21 happens to be the last day of the Festival of Tabernacles. Anyway, it's curious that God chose to make use of that day. If you go ahead and read through all of chapter 2, actually what happens, all of chapter 1 and chapter 2, the short summary of what is said is, God says, look, you guys have been building your expensive homes and getting more and more. I'm tired of waiting. In year 2 of Darius, I am giving you a directive to get my temple built. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to help you build it. And I'm going to put my spirit in you to make you want to build it. And so Zerubbabel and Joshua, Zerubbabel was the governor at the time, and Joshua was the high priest at the time, and they had been goosed by God and said, build my temple, and they agreed to do it. They completed the temple in the year 516, 4 years later. So, in 520, the message comes from God himself, simultaneously with the inquiry from the emperor, simultaneously with the actions by Zerubbabel and Joshua to get the temple built. So, if you read Haggai, that's what you see. All right, let's go to the next screen, John. Nobody can read that screen anyway. So, chapter 7. What happens in chapter 7 in Ezra? This is the important chapter. Ezra, son of the last high priest, Ezra, who was born and alive at least in the year 586. He returns to Jerusalem. He arrives. He leaves on day one, month one, of the year after the temple is built. The temple is rebuilt in the year 516. Ezra hops on his donkey, rides in the wagon, whatever it might be. He's an old man now. By the way, let's say that Ezra was 10 years old when his father was killed. I'm just pulling the number out of here. If he was 10 years old when his father was killed, how old would he have been when he arrived in Jerusalem in the year 515? So 586 plus 10 minus 515. Keep in mind the period of captivity is 70 years. So if you just said 70 years plus 1. So he's 71 years old, if he's 10 years old, he's 81 years old. Okay. So Ezra, when he writes chapter 7, is 81 years old if he was 10 years old when his father was killed. If he was 20 years old when his father was killed, he would be 91 years old. Okay? We don't know how old he was when his father died. Whatever it is, he's now making a transit from Babylon to Jerusalem in the year 515. And this is his story. He says, I arrived, and when I arrived, in verse 13, these are the things that happened in verse in chapter 7. Verse 13 says, Artaxerxes frees all the Jews from Persian captivity. That's in verse 13. Keep in mind, this is at the end of the 70 years. They've been captive for 70 years. The emancipation decree is given in chapter 7. All Jews are free. You may return from Babylon, you may return to Jerusalem. So the problem is beyond the burden. And by the way, I, king, am going to make a nice donation of silver and gold to help you decorate the temple. You got it built, and I'm going to help you put some nice stuff in it. He also says that I am going to allow you to go out and have a fundraising drive to collect as much money as you possibly can out of the province of Babylon. For anybody who doesn't want to go with you, they're welcome to send money from the province of Babylon to Jerusalem. In verse 24, we're also going to allow all the Levites who serve, all the temple workers who serve in Jerusalem, you're free from empire taxes forevermore. Hey, no wonder people wanted to be Levites. Verse 25, keep in mind that they have been subject to being judged. All the judges have been appointed by their enemies. Darius says, you can now appoint your own judges for anybody who happens to keep the law of God. And anybody who wants to start keeping the law of God, you can now set up your own schools and teach about God. That is all written in Ezra chapter 7. So, in,
was Darius a politician or a Christian?
Darius worshiped the god of Ahura Mazda. The Ahura Mazda is the god of Zoroastrianism, which is still a religion today. It's a small religion. He was a politician. He had a policy of wherever he went, he tended to allow the reestablishment of that territory's religion. He found it as a good way to keep people happy. If you can worship your own god of your choice, you probably won't rebel. Or at least you're less likely to do that. So he allowed anybody and everything. But in everything Darius says, in virtually every one of his inscriptions, he gives credit to Ahura Mazda. So Ezra chapter 7 is written in the year after, or written about the year after the temple was completed. The temple was built, according to Ezra 6 chapter 6, verse 15, was built in the year 516, exactly 70 years after it had been destroyed. the following year, as in the next month. So the temple is completed in the 12th month, and in the first month, Ezra sets off for Jerusalem. Normally it takes about 1 month to get there, it took them 4 months. Why did it take them 4 months? Well, number one, it was the second Exodus. You had all of the Jews who wanted to leave Babylon were now allowed to go back to Jerusalem. All of them had been freed. They were carrying with them wagon loads of goods. Gold, silver. And if you read Ezra chapter 6, excuse me, if you read Haggai chapter 1 and chapter 2, he says, I am the God of gold and silver, and you guys can have all. It's an extremely wondrous result. Let's go to our next screen, Doctor. Okay, so let's look at what we have here for a summary. Year 539, Cyrus captures Babylon. He issues a decree, and he, in that decree, says anybody who wants to go back to Jerusalem may. What you see up there at the top, under Cyrus captures Babylon in year 47 to 23, the 47 years is how long it's been since they were taken captive. It is 23 more years until the year 516, which would be the end of the 70-year captivity. So 23 years before the 70 years is up, 50,000 Jews are released from captivity early. But they're going back to a place where things are not going well. They're going back to Jerusalem where like 1 out of 10 can stay there. God is telling them, I'm punishing you, I'm giving you droughts, taking all of your stuff. There's lots of thievery going on by your neighboring tribes. Things are not working well for you. And it's not because you chose to put yourself before me. I wanted my temple built first. You didn't build my temple first. And so everything's going wrong for you. That decree went forth in 539, 50,000 went. So what's the difference between 539 and 516? In 516, the temple has been built. They are now rewarded, got help from building, and all of the Jews are released from captivity, not just 50,000, all of them. You'll notice that Nehemiah is made governor down there in year 20 of Darius. In year 20, Nehemiah happens to be the cupbearer of King Darius. And one day, Darius looks up and says, you're not happy. It's not good news for my wine taster. I'm making sure my wine hasn't been poisoned. If you're not happy, I will concern. Why are you not happy? Thinking you're going to die or something? Did you poison my grape? What's going on here? I says, no, it's not that. I'm not happy because even though the temple has been rebuilt, even though you released all my people, I chose to stay. But all of my people, the Jews, I let them go back. I'm not happy because there's still holes in the walls. The city wall is not built and they're still being harassed by the neighbors. So you want to go back and rebuild the wall? Yeah. How long are you going to be gone for? Well, tell you what, you go ahead and go. I'll make you governor. You're going to take Zerubbabel's place, and now you can be governor of Jerusalem. You get that wall built. So, Nehemiah heads back, gets to Jerusalem. You can read his story and the whole book of Nehemiah. He finds out the wall hasn't been fixed. He chooses to fix it. It takes him 52 days. They didn't have him holding the wall for years. He manages to fix it in 52 days. He's governor for 12 years during the reign of Nehemiah. So keep in mind the things we need to do. Let's go to the next screen here. So this is the overall time frame that we're looking at. The Jews are taken captive in 586. They're all released after the year 516. There is a decree from Cyrus in 539. There's a decree reaffirmed by Darius in the year 520. God himself issues a decree to rebuild my temple. And he gives that decree in the book of Haggai, and it's given in the second year of Darius, and it happens to be the year 520. That's why it's highlighted in yellow, because God himself issues this decree to build my temple. 4 years later, the temple is completed in the year 516. In year 515, the year immediately following the temple being rebuilt, all the Jews were released from captivity. Nehemiah completes the wall in year 501. City is rebuilt, the temple is rebuilt, and that is all done in year 500. 457. The problem with anything we've done here. The problem is we don't land on 457. We need to land on 457. 457 is important. The answer must be 457. The answer is not 457. It mustn't be 457. I'm passing the time.
What is this? I get a purple up there under 464. I can't read that one.
Where are you looking at?
In the purple under 464, the purple or bluish box. What does that say? Over to the right.
Oh.
And one more to the right.
So right at the very end where that orange box is.
Oh, to the left is.
All right. So we're talking about long maintenance.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So Longimanus was the emperor of the Persian Empire for 41 years. And so it's simply given his name, it's Artaxerxes Longimanus, which is 41 years. The three dots are something standing on the screen for 41 years. This is to scale. That's what. So 2011 as a minister means he served longer than what I put on the screen, Longimanus served more than what I put on the screen. All right, obviously, I went through this extremely quickly today. If you go to the website called servantsvoice.com, you can find the whole thing written out. So you can read it at your leisure. Take a look at it. It's at servantsvoice.com. So, I apologize for going through so quickly. But I felt it important to at least have the overall concept, and then we can go through it more detail. We still have a problem. I just made the problem worse. Remember, you have a homework assignment. For those of you who have done your homework, thank you very much. For those of you who have not done your homework, this is paper for you. You can write on it. Remember, the homework assignment is this. Yes, I'm extending the due date. And the penalties for failure to comply are increasingly worse. We started looking at ones that got talked about. You know, any holes in your pockets, your cross won't yield, all kinds of bad things happen. But for those of you who do, as soon as God got his temple built, as soon as the foundation was laid, God says, I'm happy. All of it is going to get good for you. Anyways, the assignment was to the best of supply to us today. Why or why not? Why or why not? So we care about some of you. The third of you did the assignment, thank you. What the intent is we'll take that assignment, we'll put it up on a document, share it with you, we'll put the names off. So I'm not trying to embarrass you, I'm not trying to make you feel right or wrong. There is no right or wrong. The question is, why do you think? Service. Yes. Yeah.